Thank you for joining us on The Skeptic Psychic, where we delve into ancient societies, ghosts, the paranormal, UFOs, all looking at it from the perspective of the true believer and from the skeptic perspective. Joining me, my partner, my co-host, my sibling, Kimber Rodriguez. Myself, I am Richard Gregg. And again, let's look into being the skeptic psychic.
And hello once again. And welcome once again. Welcome. I'm going to keep stressing that because somehow today of all days, the internet gremlins and trolls have decided to deny me, yes, me, the skeptic psychic, to actually have a conversation with my wonderful sister, kindly, wonderful, polite, and very, very strong-willed sister of mine, Kimber Rodriguez.
Tell you, the more and more you give me these introductions, the more and more my head swells.
You deserve it.
Okay. So how have you been this week?
Busy. Just to let people future know that yesterday, April the 1st, 2025, was not an April Fool's humor. The man who brought us Maverick and Top Gun died.
No, he wasn't Maverick. He was the Iceman.
He was the Iceman.
Yeah, Maverick was Tom Cruise, but yes, he was a splendid actor, from Willow to Top Gun to story of Jim Morrison.
The Doors.
Yeah, Mercy's favorite actor.
Right. He was also, before his sickness got in, he was going to go on the road on a one-man show doing Mark Twain. His actual was going to be a conversation with Sam Clemens.
Interesting. Well, tonight we have a really interesting... Yes. Well, if the internet gods will play nice with us tonight, we have a fascinating and wonderful guest joining us.
Before you begin, they do not deserve the name gods. They are gremlins. They are trolls. They are imps.
Okay. Internet gremlins, trolls, and imps. Try saying that. Oh, goodness. That's a tongue twister. But yes, my beautiful, wonderful friend Darlene Sochin is with us. And a little bit about her. 20 years ago, after a cancer diagnosis, she had a life-changing visit from three archangels who assured her of full healing and set her on her path of purpose. That moment led to Reiki and awakened her calling to gently guide others through their own spiritual awakenings. She has over 26 years of preschool teaching and parenting educating. And she brings a playful and compassionate and deeply sacred approach to healing, supported by angels, spirit animals, and the benevolent beings walking beside you on your journey. Welcome, Darlene. We're so happy to have you with us tonight.
Thank you. It's going to be fun.
Yes. So, starting off, your journey from a 26-year teaching career to becoming a Reiki master is very inspiring. What motivated you to take this transition, and how does your background in education influence your healing practices?
Healers who often have something called a 2x4 upside the head to get us back on path. Cancer was that for me, and I never looked back, and woke me up to really see what's important in the world. You know, I grew up with an anxious family and, you know, drama queen and the silliest things that I let bother me. And when you face cancer and then you see an alternative to that life, everything changed. And I swore I would never go back. I do once in a while. Like, you know, we have these patterns. We have these energetic, our DNA is, we inherit a lot of the behaviors and personalities we have. So I do occasionally see that come out in me. But when I focus just on feeling good, asking myself, how can I be a contribution and how I can receive as well? I think about that childlike quality and the importance it is to maintain that innocence or that level of joy. So when I approach healing, I use my teaching, my sensitivity to others' concerns or questions. I'm able to hold, like, if you can hold space for a screaming 3-year-old, you can pretty much hold space for anybody or anything. So I am able to tune out the heaviness or to tune out the drama, and I can ground myself and allow whomever I'm working with just be themselves, let it out, let it free, let it roll. And as you're doing that, we'll work together to see what you can do to feel better.
That is so awesome. I know how those 3-year-olds can be. Got several nieces and nephews. And so, yes, I remember them all at that age and dealing with them.
And yeah, so this was like classrooms filled with them.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So you learn quick. And I was organically a teacher, like someone who could sit and hold space and respect their tantrums, you know, respect their no's. We got a lot of no.
Oh yeah.
And there's this level of, okay, you know, you're not ready yet, or you're not comfortable. It's how I work with my clients. If you're not ready yet, we'll walk slowly through whatever you're navigating. I'm not the kind of person who forces someone to heal or tell them something they're not ready for. I take them slowly.
I'm sorry, I'm not saying a lot, but at the same time, my internet is kind of acting very funky, so I'm listening. So I'm hearing everything you're saying.
Yes. So you mentioned that your first Reiki session awakened your soul during a challenging time. How did this shape your path towards energy healing?
I just saw that it gifted me everything. The anxiety went away. The questions went away. During a Reiki session, you lie there and let your body rest. You let your body do what it needs to do. And I felt like there was no bigger gift than letting your body rest, because we're always trying to push ourselves or do things we think we should, or we do things because we have to push harder in order to, you know, be successful or whatever it is. And oftentimes the answer is the opposite. The answer is slow down. Let your body relax, meditate. And if it's not meditation, it's doing something else to take care of yourself and your body. And to me, my other options were not as gentle or loving. And some people need that in order to grow and to, in order to slowly, again, slowly step into their confidence and slowly step onto their path. I like the idea of helping people so they don't necessarily have to have that 2x4 like I had, you know, like, right. So where can I help people be more proactive with developing their skills? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I prefer that.
Yeah. Cancer has always been a big fear of mine. We lost our dad to cancer in 2008. And a few years before that, his father passed away from cancer. And a few years before that, his mother passed away. Yeah, we lost both my grandmother, my grandfather, my dad to cancer. And now his brother is in stage 4 cancer. So it's always been
something. And we also lost, a couple of years later, we lost my mother's mother to cancer too, Mama Deedle.
Well, she had cancer, but that wasn't what killed her, because she got into remission from the cancer, but she ended up having several strokes.
Oh, wow.
And it got to where they couldn't, she was basically on life support because of having so many strokes that they figured it was best just to let her go instead of having her there suffering. But yeah, we have had a lot of illness on both sides of our family. And
so what is something that you, like an action step for you? So rather than the fear of it, because it's obviously there, how could you not be afraid of something so evident in, you know, in your family?
My action step is that, one, I've been losing weight. Two, I've been eating a lot more healthier stuff. I don't drink, don't smoke. I don't cuss. I'm working on trying to get a lot more positivity in my life, as opposed to, you know, the family obsession into the darker voices that in our heads.
Right. And that's one thing I've heard is that it feeds off of anger and resentment.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to keep a lot of that out of my life as possible and try to maintain that positivity. And like he said, don't drink, don't smoke. Should eat healthier, but I love food. That's like my one major vice is food.
I'm just almost a Adam Ant song. I don't drink, don't smoke, don't you know?
That's what was in my head when you were saying it. Yeah,
now that is interesting.
Don't drink, don't smoke. What do you do? Then there's the next question. What do you do? So if you see, this is also something that I see happen. I do it too. So you look at what you keep away from, what you don't allow yourself to do. My question to you is, what do you allow yourself to do? Because that's part of the positivity. So if you're going to take away certain things, what can you add instead? That's what I focus on a lot with my clients.
That exactly is what I am doing right now, is trying to find the things to replace the don't drink, don't smoke, don't curse, don't, you know.
Yep.
The aspects of the goody two shoes, you know.
Yes.
I mean, love to dance, love to sing, love to watch old movies, love to read. In fact, my wife, Shauna, is a avid reader, and we'll spend several nights together with her just reading to me.
That's beautiful. I love that. So you have an interest in the same kinds of books?
Yes, we do.
Wow. Wow. Anything in particular that's a favorite?
Well, right now we've been going into a lot of the modern day retelling of fairy tales. We just finished one about a guy that was whose soul is embedded into a sword, protecting a woman whose family wants to kill her for her inheritance.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it's somewhat, one of the characters in it is a priest of the rat god, and the wife all of a sudden starts doing Rizzo's voice for him, you know, from the Muppets. Which is awesome. Hilarious.
So if Indigo Healing focuses on assisting empaths and highly intuitive visuals, what challenges do these people face, and how does your practice support them in those challenges?
Their challenges are often they're struggling with their what they know is true and what they've been told is true, as far as who they are and why they're here. So some people know they have these gifts and they want to start exploring them, but then there's someone in their life or a belief system that they were taught that is holding them back. So we, you know, we walk through more about, well, what would it feel like if you could do what you know you can do? Rather than, I'm not one of those people who does like shadow work or anything. I have them bring in the energy of what that would feel like if they could do what they want to do. And we walk from there. We go from there. And slowly we unearth the ways that they can build their confidence and slowly start walking their path. And start recognizing what they can do, start acknowledging what they can do. A lot of times it's self-worth. And again, it's about resting and meditating and quieting your mind and your body so that there's more clarity with what you want or what's hidden underneath, because we suppress it for so many years, so many decades. And a lot of people will come and say, I don't know what I want. I just know there's something and I don't know how to get to it. The answer to get to it is to quiet the mind, because what you're doing then is you're quieting the belief systems and you're quieting the, you know, the mother or the brother or the, or the religion sometimes will. I've had so many people come to me where they grew up in a religion that taught them not to do what their soul is telling them to do. So we approach it first by teaching, walking through how to relax the body. Let's not focus on what constrains you. Let's not focus on what tenses you up. Let's learn what relaxes you.
It goes back to like what we were talking about off camera, where, you know, growing up, we grew up and my mom was being very, you know, she was very spiritual. In the fact of she had these gifts, she embraced them, she would talk about them. But then my dad's side of the family was like, you know, the stern Christian, you know, like I told you earlier, I got a message from a family member, just for talking about my intuition, that I was getting into witchcraft. And it just really, it boggles my mind, because listening to your intuition is a lot like saying, listen to the Holy Spirit, or, you know, listen to what it's telling you. And it talks about, in Corinthians, it talks about the gifts from God. And one of them is the gift of prophecy, you know, they have the gift of tongues, but yet you talk about it in a normal situation and, oh, you're getting into witchcraft. And so I find myself having that fear of judgment getting into, wow. And I've been told that I'm that I have the capability to be a medium, that I have very strong intuition and abilities, but I just need to, one, believe in myself, to let go of those judgments and those fears in order to open that up. But that's something that I've struggled with for as long as I can remember, is that, one, the fear of judgment and the fear of bringing something in that I can't handle. Uh-huh. So that has always held me back.
Right. In a great place, okay. A great place to start is first learning to manage your own energy. So by doing that, you're learning how to ground, you're learning how to clear your energy. You're learning how to develop boundaries with the physical and the spirit entities in the world. And when your focus is energy management, you don't have to worry about who's going to judge you for that, because what you're doing is just taking care of your own energy. So that's always a great place to start, is building your foundation.
Awesome. You were going to say something there, bro?
Yes, I was.
Okay.
You were just talking about Corinthians. I actually pulled it up, 1 Corinthians 12. Now, these are the gifts of the spirits, brothers and sisters. I do not want you to be uninformed. You know that they were pagans. Somehow or other, you were influenced and led astray to mute idols. Therefore, I want you to know that no one who is speaking by the Spirit of God says, Jesus be cursed. And no one can say, Jesus
is Lord, except by the Holy Spirit. There are different types of gifts, but the same Spirit distributes them. There are different kinds of services, but the same Lord. There are different kinds of working, but all in all of them and everyone is the same God at work. So basically, yeah, you still there?
Yes, yeah. We're still here.
Okay. So basically, it's a lot of people look at, go back and look at Solomon, who was calling upon witches and demons and got, you know, and say, well, that the Lord does not want you to do that. The Lord does not want you to call upon devils and demons. The only person he wants you to call upon is him. And he does give people certain gifts, intuition, the gift of the tongues, the gift of, comprehension, that sort of thing. And for people to understand that the gift does not come from the gift that the Lord grants you are not to be used in a way that detracts from the gifts of nature.
Right,
exactly. And I mean, I remember when my husband, because my husband was raised Catholic, I was raised Baptist, but when we were getting married, since we were getting married in a Catholic church, we had to go through these confirmation classes. And I remember in the class, we had a lesson on these gifts, and we talked about them. And, you know, the priest that was teaching the class, you know, went over each one and described them. And we even tried practicing tongues, and, you know, it was like the weirdest thing, but it reminds me of a joke from this YouTube video where this guy, he is going to this fundamental church, and everybody's waiting for somebody to start talking tongues. Nobody's done it. Excuse me. And so one day he's like, I'm just going to throw something out there. And he says, Shamala Hamala. And he just wasn't talking tongues. He just said it because, you know, just wanted to see what he would get. And so everybody in the church is like, oh my gosh, he's finally got the gift. And everybody starts chanting Shamala Hamala and crying. So that's how I felt that day that we were practicing tongues. I was just like, okay, just gibberish. And they're like, just keep going. Eventually it'll change to something. Just speak the gibber. And it's like, okay, I feel really weird. But
that is what they say. Just start talking until it starts, something happens. It's like, you know, when you're starting the car, you know, if it's cold or something, you have to get it. I don't know. But definitely, if you start playing with it.
True story. A friend, whom I will not name, went to a Pentecostal church. And as they rise up to sing the benediction, this gentleman behind him puts his hand down on him and speaks in tongue. And my friend turns around and just belts him, because my friend does not like to be touched.
Oh.
Okay. So right after that, he was asked to leave the church.
Okay. I went to a Pentecostal church with a friend of mine one time, and oh my gosh, I was scared when they started getting up there and started talking in tongues, and the preacher was, you know, touching these people, and they were fainting and falling over and crying. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, what is going on? What did you bring me into? It was the weirdest situation. But
I like to know when I go into a setting like that, whether it's channeling or someone speaking in tongues, I like to know who it is. Number one, that's facilitating, holding space, as well as the people. So I have an idea of where that energy is coming from. So I always prepare I have to know who these people are. I won't, because of previous experiences, I now know to research before I go into a setting like that, because my energy is so sensitive.
I didn't expect it because she was raised Baptist like me. And so I'm thinking I'm going to a Baptist service, and it was, that was the, not a Baptist service. I've been my whole life going to Baptist church, and I never saw that in a Baptist church. So I know you also do animal Reiki. How does that energy benefit the animals? What's a memorable experience?
Is it
that
a different progress?
Is it what?
Is it a different process? If say you're doing a cat or a dog or a goldfish, I'm being very serious. I'm not trying to be sarcastic or anything like that.
No,
but
yeah.
Is it different from a human perspective, or is it different from a cat, dog, goldfish, reptile type of like experience? Like,
so the difference.
It sounded
when
like I'm being sarcastic.
When I do Reiki, when I offer Reiki, I'm more or less holding space and giving them an opportunity to close their eyes, relax their body, having no other expectations other than that. Because how often in our lives are we given that opportunity except to sleep? Right. So for humans, they're expecting me to help them relax. The animals guide the session. So for example, my favorite Reiki client is a horse. We go into his arena and he will start at the other end. I stand with my hands up like this, and he will take his time and walk backwards into the energy field that I'm providing
interesting
for him. And he guides the entire session. I let him, he tells me what he needs by giving me the body parts he wants my hands on. I don't move. When it's an animal, I let the animal tell me what they want by showing me what they want with their body. Mm-hmm. So Maddie will back up into my hands. He will also turn sideways and give me either his hips or his legs. He'll even lift a leg to say he wants, support in a certain part of his body. But when it's the animals, I let them totally write the script. And, some animals, they prefer not even to have hands on, whereas humans, I will put my hands on their bodies if that's okay with them. But animals, the session is totally up to them, which is why I love working with the animals, because it's also an opportunity for them to speak and get their needs met without the human thinking they know everything. So to me, animal Reiki is just something so special and so unique that I wish I could do it every single day.
That's interesting.
Dogs, cats, it's all pretty much the same, where it's up to them. So a fish will come up to the side of the bowl, a bird will come down from the tree. The Komodo dragons will come and lean up into the glass of their tank. If they're birds will come up to my hands. The animals are just so aware of what I'm doing. I very rarely will have an animal, not attend to the experience. Even the wild animals too come to me.
That is so amazing, because animals are so in tune that, I hate it when people say animals don't have a soul, because they so do. And their soul to me is so much more genuine than most humans.
Yes.
So pure. And I love that.
A lot of people compare me to St. Francis of Assisi when it comes to animals, because I have had
animals just come up to me. My wife can attest to it. We were out in the, visiting her mother, and this little chick, wild chick, comes running up to me and just squeak, 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 squeak. I pick it up, you know, pet it, feed it, that sort of thing. And this is, we come to find out later, this was a wild pheasant who had just lost its mother. And so we took it to a local veterinarian so they could put it through the 4-H foundation so that way somebody could raise it.
Yep.
Yeah, animals are very...
Yes, I have that touch.
Yes. I just love that how animals are so pure and so in tune with things that we can't see or feel or hear. They are in tune with it. It just, I love animals.
They sense energy. They sense when it's important to be afraid. They sense when they're feeling safe. Horses can feel, what is it? It's like the length of 2 football fields. A horse can feel someone's energy that far away.
Oh, wow.
And sense somebody coming.
Yeah. Yeah, my mom has always been very good with horses too. I remember us going to the stock show and we would go through the barn and look at the animals. And I remember her just sitting there petting the horses and talking to them, and you could tell that there was that connection and that bond, and they'd be there for 20-30 minutes just talking with the horse, and the horse just being calm, and every once in a while it would let out a grunt or something, like you could, like it was responding to her, and it always fascinated me.
Animals are the best. Unconditional love. I say that all the time. There's nothing like it. Nothing.
Yes. I see you've got your cat there, speaking of animals.
Hi, baby cat.
Yes.
This is the official Skeptic Sidekick kitten. his name is Oliver Dean.
He likes to crawl up and sit on his shoulder while he pets him. And
right.
Stay there for hours.
He was a rescue kitten. He's been out on the streets. Although he's not a tough gangster, he was the one that everybody picked on. So he demanded to be petted. I do apologize for interrupting the podcast, but...
He came at perfect timing.
Yes, as we're talking about animal Reiki, he must have sensed that energy as well.
It was his cue. Oh, here's my cue. Yes. Time for my close-up.
He likes to whisper and tell me secrets, so...
Yes, I know you also work with empaths and providing support for children of empaths. What are signs to indicate that a child might be empathic? And what strategies could you recommend for parents to nurture and guide their children?
Children who are empaths will often be easily distracted, very emotional, have high sensitivities to everything, to sound, to food, lots of allergies. They're just so, their bodies are so sensitive and meant to be here to express love and light. And their bodies are coming into a world that is pretty chaotic. So the denseness you will often see children who are empaths struggling because they're trying to be the light, but what they're picking up on what is so heavy and the world is, you know, is in disruption right now because we have to disrupt in order to rebuild. And so right now, when you're finding that your children may be easily distracted or having trouble focusing, having these sensitivities to clothes, to noises, to things that you as an adult might not understand. Oftentimes it's their nervous system as empaths picking up too much information. That's how they're telling us. So if you think about anybody in a situation where there's too much going on, that's what to look for. And I would say, be very compassionate. So there might be behavior outbursts as well, because if you're a child, especially younger children, don't have a way of expressing what's going on. They can't say, you know, we're in Walmart and there's just the lights are too bright and there's too many people and too much going on, and they don't have the words to say it. So we often will see this in a behavior, not to say all behaviors are children who are empaths, but it's definitely something to consider. And it isn't always something that can be understood medically either, because it's an energy. They're sensitive to energy. So whatever you can do to support any child, whether they're an empath or not an empath, is talking to them. First of all, letting them know today we're going to be going here, here, and here. Like, give them a plan. Don't just drag them into the store. Let them know what's going on. Prepare them. Be preventative. Be proactive. If you know your child is sensitive to light, maybe go into stores that don't have those bright fluorescent lights, or get them really cool red glasses. I have them often when I'm on my computer and the light gives me migraines. Like, research what can help empaths going out into public. And oftentimes adults will say, hey, I have that issue too, as like my child does, and not be aware of it until they see it in their children. So there's some kids you might see have headphones on in a store. Give them headphones and have, you know, the kind of music they like playing. So this, it helps to keep out overstimulation that's going on outside of them. If you have a teacher, because oftentimes what will happen is their productivity in school may not be up to par because there's so much going on in a classroom. I would take the time to talk, to pull the teacher aside. Can we talk? My child has some extra sensitivities, and this is what we do at home. Sometimes hopefully you can find a teacher that will help you make a plan. Mm-hmm. You can work with the school. But if you, first of all, suspect that your child might be an empath, then they are. Then they're displaying something. Find a professional who works with them. You might find a therapist who does, you know, art therapy, right? So for some people, they still need to feel comfortable when it comes to their children. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, that you still want to do something mainstream, work with someone who also brings in something else, like mm-hmm. a therapist, but perhaps an art therapist. Allow those little different types of unique qualifications when you invite people in to help you with your family. That's what I would recommend.
Interesting. I know you and I have talked about this quite a bit, both having ADHD, about the connection between being neurodivergent and having, you know, being more gifted, so to speak. And I've seen this in people who are autistic, ADHD, schizophrenic, manic depressant. Something about the chemistry in the brain seems to correlate with intuition and these abilities. And it's something that I've always been fascinated with. And I've tried talking to other people and they're like, well, I've never heard of that, or I don't know if that's true. But I know talking with you, that's something that we both have been like, yes, it is definitely a factor when you have these mental differences, that it also intunes more with the spiritual as well.
Absolutely. There's something, the brain waves are literally, the brain waves function differently. That it's as simple as that. It's scientific and it's simple. If you measure the brain waves of people with ADHD or chemical imbalances, and it will be, the brain waves fluctuate differently, which means you will be seeing different types of experiences or expressions through the brain. We're using different areas of the brain because the brain wave is at a different wavelength.
Yeah. There's an ADHD doctor, and I can't remember his name, but if I find it, I'll post it. But he did actual brain scans of a normal person who's considered neurotypical and an ADHD brain. And like you said, the brain waves were different. The shape of the brain, I mean, there were so many differences between a normal person and an ADHD person that you can't just say, oh, it's all in your head, because there are.
Well, it is.
It is, yes. But scientifically, it's proven. And I just find that so fascinating.
Right. We're using, and what's interesting too is the stigma that comes along with all of the how many labels did you just mention?
Oh my goodness. That's 10, just 15. Half of what I heard growing up.
Our culture labels and turns these differences into a stigma, into a problem, into something that needs a drug. If you go to other cultures and discuss very similar behaviors, mm-hmm. it's not called a stigma. It's looked at as, oh, this brain functions differently.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's totally what it is our brain functions differently. And I know you and I have also talked about how in some cultures, they look at these people as being holy men because of their, and here it's like, oh, well, they should be locked away in an institution or medicated. Whereas in other cultures, they're revered.
They're the medicine man or the medicine woman of the tribe because they can do all of these things. Yeah.
Yes.
It's mind blowing.
Yes. Definitely mind blowing. Again, I'm sorry. I keep popping in, popping out, popping in, popping up, but I am here listening.
Yes.
So.
Now, reflecting on your extensive experience with both teaching and healing, what advice would you give someone like me who is considering a career or a path in energy healing or to deepen their spiritual practice?
It's really funny. Like I used to, the first thing I'm going to mention, I would hear it and just laugh because I just thought it was more, it was like a marketing tool. However, the number one recommendation I would say is a mentor. And that doesn't mean it's someone you have to pay. My two best friends have been my mentors for the last 20 years. Mentor meaning someone who has experienced what you're going through. They may even be a few steps ahead of you, but they can help support you. Somebody you can talk to. Finding a mentor and a community. That's where I would start. And the second place is committing to your self-care, to making sure that you are your first priority, your health, your wellness, your energy, and you build some sort of daily plan, not just when you're having a problem. Because a lot of people, even healers, people who want to be healers or anybody else, they'll look into their health and wellness when there's a scare, right? Mm-hmm. Or when there's a problem or a challenge. Oh, yeah, I should just start something. I would say start today, choosing what you can do. It doesn't have to be in the morning. Choose something that you can do every single day that involves taking care of acknowledging your body and your spirit. It could be saying, okay, every day I'm going to go outside. I'm going to deep breathe in nature. I'm going to take a walk. When you brush your teeth, you can do breath work, because breath work is one of the most incredible tools to help regulate your nervous system. Again, you know, we're talking ADHD or feeling overstimulated, like healers and energy workers, we tend to be oversensitive to feeling energies around us. The number one tool for that, well, besides breath work, would be how you can regulate your nervous system. And breathwork just happens to be one of the ways to do that. So mentor and ways to daily practice that, so you're paying attention to your body and your spirit. And three would be making sure your nervous system is regulated at all times.
Awesome. I know I also have anxiety, which is a, people with ADHD are known to have comorbidities, and mine just happens to be anxiety. And I find that breath work helps so much when I start getting anxious or start feeling like I'm going to go into a panic attack. If I just sit and start doing deep breathing, like you said, it helps calm me down, relaxes me.
It's amazing. Like, I don't know. There's other things like sound healing and music. I had a 92-year-old man show me a Tai Chi a movement for anxiety or just to get your balance back. And you take your fists lightly on your hips, on your hip bones, and just hit there for a couple of minutes. And that's also something that worked. Oh, incredible human. But when we're wanting to be healers, when we are sensitive to energy and, you know, we have that calling, the first priority is you, yourself, and your body and your spirit. And then those who you're going to help and support come after. Because a lot of times, I say this to everybody, a lot of times people have this calling, they jump into a modality, and now you can do it so you can do it in a couple hours and say, hey, I'm a Reiki master. Like, if you can just go anywhere online, or I'm a this, I'm a that, put up a plaque and start selling your services. We have to first do our own work, because if we're energy healers, we're going to be we're going to be sharing energies. So whatever it is we're holding on to or carrying, we're going to be sharing that. And we're also going to be taking on, if we don't have the tools, we'll be taking on the clients that we're working on, their, what they're going through, and not know what to do with that energy. And that gets us sick. So the first step is we have to take care of ourselves. And I'm saying not completely and totally take care of ourselves before we become practitioners, but you have to start and take care of some of the major stuff going on before you can become the most effective practitioner. You've got to. Don't just take a class and run out there and put your hands on people's bodies.
Please don't. Yes. I have a friend who, she also is a reggae master, or Reiki master.
My mom calls it Reiki. Yeah.
And she was telling me, like, first,
I got Reiki master.
But she was telling me, like, you have to first, the first introduction is to do Reiki on yourself. And then the second level is where they teach you how to do it on other people. Exactly. And then, like, the next one is like how to teach it. So absolutely. She's like, you have to go through these certain steps. You can't just take one class and be like, oh, now I know Reiki. I can go out there and start doing it.
And unfortunately, a lot of people do. Because there's so many, first of all, Reiki itself, there's so many lineages. And there's not one there's not one way to do Reiki. There's thousands of Reiki teachers and lineages. And but any kind of, I beg people, any kind of energy work, first do take care of yourself for a time period before you start putting your hands on others.
Yes, definitely. So, well, we have really enjoyed this talk. I love talking with you. I could talk with you for hours. But thank you so much.
You're a wonderful person, by the way.
Thank you.
Yes.
I really enjoyed this time, despite the fact that dropping in and out of it. I do apologize.
I'm interested to have another conversation with you to hear if you have more questions.
Yes.
We'll have a lot of questions.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll do it again. And, you know, because now you know, you're a skeptic psychic. So I want to see, you know, what if we can go deeper in another conversation. I would like that.
Yeah, and I know he also, since you live in Oregon, he wanted to kind of touch on some of the hauntings there. So we can definitely have you on again to go deeper and maybe get into some of the hauntings that you've experienced.
Yeah, and I will tell people, different parts of the world have different energies, because some people, you know, they're not sure if that's true or not. And there are, like, out here where I am, heavy energies, but I can go to somewhere in Florida and feel as light as a feather.
So if you're
experiencing that, it's happening.
We grew up in San Antonio, Texas, and that's a hot spot itself, since they had, like, you know, the Native Americans and the Battle of the Alamo, and it's just like, it's just definitely a hot spot there where something, it's like just about everywhere you go in town, you're going to run into a spirit or two.
And then if you feel it, you're feeling it. You're mm-hmm. like, don't think that you're imagining it. It's happening. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I can remember as a kid going through this museum that my mom used to always take us to. And I always felt like somebody was, like, peeking over the corner watching me. And then come to find out as I got older that it was haunted by the lady who, like, donated a lot of stuff and was a, and there was a couple of museums that I went through that. I'm sorry.
She was the first docent.
Yes. The first docent of the, and she still haunts the museum. And then there's another one too that I got the same feeling when I was going through, and, you know, I was feeling, and it turns out she was, it's this lady in the second museum. She donated her whole house.
Her house.
Furniture, everything to the city. And they turned it into a museum, and that you could go through. And she still haunts the home. And even as a little kid, I could feel her there without knowing at the time that she was still there. So.
Cool.
Right.
That's right.
But again, let's pick this up and talk more. I hope I didn't lose you guys again. I'm so sorry. My internet decides it wants to be the shoddiest thing ever.
Oh, you're still here.
But seriously, I would love to pick this up again, discussing, you know.
Oh, no.
Part two coming soon.
Let's give him a moment. Okay, here he is. I think it's time to have somebody come out to check your internet, bro.
Yeah. So.
Do some Hail Marys, you know. Splash some holy water on the modem.
I have holy water.
There you go. Splash some of that on the mobile.
Holy water.
Maybe put some, if you have some blessed oil, put some blessed oil on the modem. Say a little prayer.
Again, I appreciate you coming on, Darlene. Again, I'm sorry my internet got shoddy. From everything I heard, was wonderful. And maybe next time I can get fully into the conversation.
We'll do a part two.
Yes, that sounds good.
Part two, definitely.
Yes. Well, have a good night. And again, thank you for coming. Oh, before you go, though, where can people find you if they're interested in your services?
Oh, my goodness. IndigoHealingsPDX.com. Yeah, I've been resting and, like, rebirthing. So it's been a while, but IndigoHealingsPDX.com.
Okay. And you're also, of course, on Facebook and any other socials?
Not proactively. Yeah. I stick mostly to Facebook. Wait a minute. My YouTube channel, yes. Darlene Socian, Energetic Educator.
Okay. I'll make sure I link both of those.
Yeah. I do videos and help people, empaths help to manage their energies more effectively.
Awesome. And bro, while and we have you, reach us,
we can also reach us at theskepticpsychic.com and our Facebook page, Skeptic Psychic, as well as, hey, again, I'll stress the fact, we do have a Discord, The Skeptic Psychic, where you can come in, say hi, how's it going, and talk to us about your experiences.
Yes. And...
5 stars. Please give me 5 stars. I really appreciate it. 5 stars. Fine, 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 yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay?
Yes, and make sure you like and subscribe our YouTube. We're still sitting at 75 people, hoping to get to at least 100. So please, if you enjoy what you're seeing, like, subscribe, share with your friends. And again, if we get 100,000 likes, I will buy an RV and travel the country.
Woohoo!
Visiting all the haunted locations. So so until next time, yes. Have a wonderful night. And go ahead. Go ahead, bro.
And unpleasant nightmare.
Well, yes. Sweet dreams. And have a good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank Goodbye. You. Bye-bye.